The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, listeners. Are you ready? It's truth-telling time. Admit it. You love to read them. Don't worry about my voice. I want you to hear my guests. So, this gives you new ideas. They even excite you. So today, if you don't know what I'm talking about, we're talking about romance novels. In North America, romance novels are the most popular genre. Despite this, throughout the decades, they have come under a lot of fire and scrutiny. And sure, they're fun to read, but did you know they're also empowering? Because the genre is mainly written by women, for women, and about women, romance novels empowers both the reader and their writers. And as living proof, join me and my special guest, New York Times best-selling author, Caridad Vignato, who has penned, are you ready for this, over nearly 50 novels and novellas that focuses much of her work on the Latino female experience. Together, Caridad and I will take you on an empowering journey beyond the boardroom, yep, and into the bedroom. So, let's get comfortable, women. Today's show will make you throw your head back in ecstasy. And guess what? Don't worry, men. I think you'll enjoy this segment, too. So, I welcome my guest, Caridad Vignato. Hi, Caridad.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here. This is one of my absolutely favorite things, which is romance novels.
I can't wait. I mean, a lot of people wonder how you even sit down and start writing a romance novel. How did you start doing this?
Well, to be honest, I got started very young in life. My mom and grandma were avid readers, and being Latinas, they used to pore through those Corintellado novels. I'm sure you may be familiar with them. They were kind of like little, graphic novels for women. And I never read those, but I got hooked on reading at a very young age. And in the fifth grade, I had a teacher who assigned us a project, which was to write a book for a class lending library. And I went home and I started writing. And the next thing I knew, at the end of the year, my mom had to help me tab about 120 pages. And I knew at that point that I wanted to be a novelist. And then, I kept it up through high school and in college and law school. And then after my daughter was born, I made a concerted effort to actually take some of the things that I had been working on and try to get them published. And it took quite a bit of time, but eventually I was able to do that. And my first novel was published, actually this is an anniversary, in September of 1999. And since then I've been publishing a few different novels or novellas every year.
Well, that's amazing because, I mean, how much dedication it takes to just sit down and write a novel. But like during the break we were talking about, 50 novels in such a short duration of time, being a mother and a full-time job. And like you said, you were finding time to do it on the train, in between, whenever you can. And the amount of dedication, people don't understand that. Just to sit down, like you said, you can't wait for inspiration to come. So what inspires you? I mean, what is your motive? I mean, that you feel like you have to get this out. How do you do that?
Well, I think, you know, there's different inspirations based on the stories, and I write in a number of different subgenres in romance. I do what is known as contemporary romances, which is your kind of modern day, you know, man and woman get together and, you know, figure out their path to a happily ever after. I also write much darker novels, paranormals and romantic suspenses. And the inspiration for those came about from a very dark time in my life, and being someone who is very connected to New York, works there every day. You know, the events of 9/11 really, I think, affected all of us. And, you know, my darker stories actually came about as a result of the need to kind of justify that good will always triumph over evil. As for the contemporaries, I think I'm a hopeful, optimistic person about the fact that there's somebody for everybody, and that, you know, love is a driving force for many, many people, and that ultimately, you know, it can happen for, you know, for anyone. And I think that's what inspires my lighter stories.
Well, so, haven't you found that, like, the men in the romance novels, they've changed, too, that it seems like not only the women have a transformation, but the men find themselves unable to be, I guess they more, they're not as promiscuous, they're more stable, once they have a woman, they stay with her. Have you noticed that in your writings?
Well, I think, you know, ultimately when it comes to a romance, I think there's certain things that romance readers come to expect, much like a mystery reader expects certain things in a whodunit, or somebody who likes thrillers expects certain actions and things to go on. Every kind of commercial fiction and genre has certain reader expectations about what happens. And I think in romance, is one of the things that we expect is that the hero will be faithful to the heroine at the point in time where they begin to get involved. And that ultimately, you know, things will work out. And I think what I like about modern romances, and since we're talking about, you know, how is it that they empower women, is that I feel that in a lot of modern romances, it's really about the partnership between the hero and the heroine. Whether it's a contemporary romance or a suspense or whatever, there's a lot more of that coming together as equals in the storyline compared to, you know, let's say some of the dime store novels of the past, where, you know, there was a very powerful hero and ultimately, you know, the woman was bent to his will and that whole kind of thing. You know, there's definitely more of a give and take and more of the two working together to arrive at some place in their relationship that satisfies both of them in various ways.
Well, that sure comes a long way from, like, I think it was 1972, The Flame and the Flower with Kathleen Woodwiss. Is that the one that that was supposed to be the first modern romance? And you can, you know, wasn't it the male hero? He rapes his 17-year-old heroine, mistaking her for a prostitute, and then out of, I guess, when he finds out that he was wrong, then he marries her when she becomes pregnant. I mean, that's way, we've come a long way, baby, huh?
Yeah, well, I can't really remember if that was the, I mean, I'm a huge Kathleen Woodwiss fan, and I count, you know, one of her works, The Wolf and the Dove, is a keeper in my library. There are very few keepers in my library, but that's one of them. And it's not without controversy as well. But I definitely think that, you know, that term bodice rippers is one we don't like in the romance genre. It definitely refers to romances where there may have been a non-consensual aspect to the relationship. And that's certainly something that I think we've really moved away from, and which reflects how we are as women today, not only in terms of our power, whether we are stay-at-home moms who have great responsibilities and a huge responsibility to family, whether we are also career women, with, again, a lot of the same responsibilities of taking care of our loved ones while also trying to establish ourselves. So I think that has changed from that, and that certainly women are in control of what's happening in their relationships in these books. And that non-consensual aspect is one which, you know, is not necessarily acceptable today, and rightly
right,
so.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we've progressed a lot. And if you look at the romance genre as a whole, it's one of the most embracing of the genres in commercial fiction. So, for example, you know, you have not only, you know, your whatever kinds of romances that you would typically expect, let's say, with a lot of the Harlequin lines, but Harlequin and others, have, you know, the African-American lines. Romance, I was one of the first authors who helped launch the nation's first Latino romance line. The romance genre has been very accepting of what they call the male-male novels. And so I think as a whole, romance readers are diverse readers that are eager to have one thing, and that's a really good story that's satisfying and provides them with an uplifting read. And I think ultimately there's such a depth of it. Even, you know, the love-inspired and a lot of the faith-based romances, Amish romances, it just is such a huge, huge segment of the marketplace, I think in part because it is so accepting of so many different ideas, as long as those ideas are good ones and good stories that go behind them.
What you just said, faith-based novels, romance novels, and I was stunned to find out that 54% of Mormon women admit to reading romance novels. Besides that, they claim that it empowered them and even helped them in their boudoir or their relationships. And I just did not realize that there was such a large segment that, like you said, for faith-based.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And I think, as I said, that's the wonderful thing. If we want to talk about empowering not only women but individuals, is giving them the opportunity to be represented in popular culture. And I think certainly romances have represented broad segments of very diverse groups of people and have helped spread understanding of it. I mean, people who read, you know, my Latino romance novels would come back to me and say, oh, my God, I love that story. I love seeing different characters. But I also recognized a lot of me in those characters, a lot of what my family goes through, a lot of our immigrant stories, in those stories of how we come to be Americans. And so that's very rewarding for me to hear that from readers. It's rewarding when they say, for example, if I have a heroine who had an illness, anemia, and someone said, oh, I really like the way you dealt with that because I have it and it makes me feel not so alone, and now I see that other people have it. You know, for me, it's trying to spread a lot of different concepts through it, and I think it's great because romance is willing to look at all those different things.
And what's so good about it, we're getting ready to go to break, but what's so good about it, like you just said, a lot of people are isolated, and they don't feel that they can talk about it, and you giving that that presentation that, like you said, they're not isolated, that they can talk about it, and it validates their feelings. So we're getting ready to go to break, and we'll be right back with New York Times bestselling author, romance author, Caridad Pinheiro. Thank you. We'll be right back.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness Presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back today with New York Times and USA Today bestseller Cara D. Pinheiro, who is best known for her different types of romance novels, anywhere from supernatural, paranormal, suspense, romantic. She'll take you to the edge. So we're back with Cara D. Hi, Cara D.
How are you doing?
Hey, listen, we were discussing, you know, like a lot of people, that concept of, you know, a romance novel. Like we were talking earlier about the Mormons. The Mormon leaders consider that like soft porn. So the criticism, where does all this criticism stem from?
Well, you know, I think that's it's a tough question. And I think when you talk about using a phrase like porn and the like, it's always been upsetting to those of us who make an effort to write novels that have issues that deal with real relationships, things that people might have to deal with, like illnesses or coming back from war wounded and the like, that, you know, they denigrate those bigger pictures in our stories because of the fact that there happens to be sexual content in the novels. Well, I hate to say it, but if we didn't have sex, none of us would be here.
Right, human nature.
Yeah, and I think the question is, how is it treated in the novel? I like to think that in the romances that a great deal of us write, it's treated to display sexuality in a way where the partners respect each other, where the sexuality comes about as a result of emotions between the parties, and not just necessarily sex for the sake of having sex, or, you know, graphic scenes just for the sake of having, you know, some kind of titillation that occurs in the stories. And I think people really have a misconception about what is in romance novels, unfortunately, because people want to focus on just possibly the sexuality in the books and avoid everything else that's worthwhile, which is probably the large part of the romance novel. And even when it comes to the faith-based novels, the faith-based novels in general will discuss relationships, but a lot of them do what we call close the door. On, you know, the intimate scenes between the partners in the book, and so that they don't even see it. And the reason for that is that possibly, you know, faith-based audiences don't feel the need to witness what goes on in the bedroom. And I think that's really an individual choice. But to reduce it, all romance novels, to something of they're just, you know, sex within the covers is a real misstatement of the genre as a whole.
You know, some people would think, compare romance novels with the new hot selling one, 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
How would you compare your writing and the, is that, would that not be classified a romance novel? Or,
well, you know, on that I have to plead the fifth because I have not read 50 Shades. And I really probably won't. But that's my own personal preference. But I think that, you know, based on, you know, things that I've heard and similar books that I've read, I think one of the things is that that novel reflects, as I mentioned, there are many different subgenres within the larger genre that we call romance. And that particular novel and some that have spun off from it in terms of having similar themes relate to an area that we call BDSM.
Right.
And that really is, again, a subsegment of a larger market. And, you know, that market is definitely intended to be something that's edgier than, you know, some of the other romances. My romances, yeah, they do get edgy. But I think when it comes to what I write, two of the key things that I always focus on in my novels is, number one, trying to show women that they have the power to control what happens to them and that they can handle any kind of relationship that they get in and overcome it, whether they rise out of poverty. As I mentioned, you know, I have had a story where the heroine came back wounded from Iraq. She was a Marine. You know, all those kinds of stories. And two, that my heroes, while being alphas, are loving and caring, and while they might have a hard exterior at first because of their own life experiences, ultimately they respect their partners. And so they would not do anything that would in any way subjugate them or dominate them in a way that was a violation of that respect that people should have between each other in a relationship.
I could definitely see where your characters and the relationship that they have between, you know, the sexes and everything, that the feminist would really appreciate that the heroine is not the poor, you know, a hand over the head with the vapors and needs a man to teach her. So I can imagine there's a change, you know, in that paradigm with feminists. Have you had any reaction from feminists?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's not just feminists, but men and women who just look down on the genre without, and what bothers me is a lot of times without ever even having read a book. You want to talk about being prejudiced. I mean, that really is the end-all be-all, is to take a position on something without ever having done anything to research it or to, you know, get your own opinion on it. So that, you know, there are people, whether you want to call them feminists or whatever, that in general just denigrate the genre as a whole without really having any concept of what goes in it. And, you know, they think that these books are not for intelligent women, and yet if you look at the Romance Writers of America statistics, a vast majority of romance readers are college educated or better.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the women who write them, college-educated professionals. I mean, I'm a lawyer in my other life, and I know many, many lawyers who are either have stopped practicing to write or still practice and write.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow yet people seem to think that these books are not written by intelligent people or read by intelligent people, and that's such a negative, biased attitude to take without having any evidence to support it.
Now, yeah, I noticed that you use a pseudonym sometimes. Is it Charity?
Oh, Sweet Charity, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, did you feel, like, compelled to have a pseudonym because, you know, you were an attorney and a mother?
No, actually, my novels have always been released with a name that my clients and others would know it was me. The Sweet Charity moniker came around because I had rights back to a number of my earlier books, and they were definitely books that were sweeter and had a different feel to them than the books I'm currently writing, which have a tendency to be a little bit darker and edgier, especially my paranormals and my suspense. And so to offset that for my readers, I decided to use the Charity name as a way to tell them, look, this is still me, this is still my voice, but these stories have a very different feel from what you may have been seeing from me more recently.
When you bring up the paranormal, your characters in paranormal, usually they feed off the lifeblood, and they tend to be sexier. Is that how you portray them?
Definitely. I think the paranormals really were, I think it was a combination that they got, as I mentioned, when I wrote my first vampire novel, which was way back in 2004, which again is another anniversary for me. That it's the 10th anniversary in March of my first vampire story. You know, I was in a very dark place. Mm-hmm. And I think the books reflected that. The heroine was definitely edgier, had a little bit of a dark streak inside of her, and I think that inspired definitely stories that were a little on the sexier side. And also on the more graphic side in terms of the violence that happened, these were suspenses, so you can imagine that there was, you know, right, fights and the use of guns and things like that. So... you know, it definitely changes from genre to genre what readers expect in the stories, but I think paranormal readers do expect, in general, stories that are a little edgier in terms of the sexual aspects and possibly the action and violence that happens in the books.
Well, do you find, like you said, you went through this dark period, do you find this writing cathartic? Is that like... for you, besides enjoying it, do you get some kind of psychological release?
I think when it came to writing that first book, I very much had to get it out. I had was going through a dark time because the line that I was writing for had folded. They had put it on hiatus. 10 and 15 years later, it's still on hiatus. And then 9/11 happened, and when that happened, it was a good 3 months or more before I could even think about writing anything. My mind was just too brutalized by everything that had happened in the city and that went through every day. Anybody who's in New York in those days can remember what it was like to walk along the streets and hear the sirens, to see the posters of people's faces on the telephone poles and the railway stations. It was a very difficult time for everyone. And I think that being at that point, you know, one Christmas I said, I have to get out of this. I've had this story I've wanted to write for months now, and I need to do it. And I literally wrote that book over like a two-week period at Christmas time.
Oh, my gosh.
And because that's how caught up I was in this story and caught up in, you know, kind of reaffirming what I wanted to, which was that, you know, this FBI agent was going to succeed at everything she wanted to do. She might not always come out of it unbloodied, but she was going to succeed. And you know, it took me a little while to sell that story, but now we must have at least a dozen or more novels in that series and more coming out next year. So, you know, it was cathartic for me, and it kind of made me continue with something that I had put aside just because life kind of, you know, became too unbearable at that time.
Well, we're getting ready to go to break, Karadid. Dad, I'm sorry, I'm misspelling your name right?
Yeah, it's Karadad.
Karadad. Okay, I'm so sorry.
No problem.
I do apologize. Okay, but we can come back from break, and I want to talk to you about how you book in bilingual Latino romance novels. Like, you know, was it half in English, half in Spanish? It's very interesting. So when we come back, we'll be talking about that. Thank you, Karadad.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they moved forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall-Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Carity Parada Pinheiro, New York Times and USA bestseller for romance novels, covering the broad range of paranormal, suspense, thriller, everything. In fact, she just has a new book that was released on October 19th called One Last Night. We welcome you back, and we'd love to hear about your latest release.
Well, thank you so much. Well, One Last Night is an erotic romance that features military heroes. It's a novella. It's the third in a series that I'm doing of, I'm going to say interconnected. They all stand alone, but they're all novellas that feature military heroes. And I do that off and on. I've done it in a number of books. This particular one was kind of inspired by the need to kind of honor our military men, women, and their families because they make such sacrifices on our behalf. I wasn't born here. I'm a political refugee from Cuba who really just appreciates everything this nation has done. But I know that that's not possible without the sacrifices of our military people. And so, you know, I try to do that in some of the books. And in particular, I wanted to write a series of stories that kind of looked at military men and women in all different phases of where they are in their careers. This latest one is about a soldier who's actually been on leave. He was injured and is on his way back, and he's has been estranged from his father, and all he wants is to make up with him before he goes back to duty, and that's not really going as smoothly as he plans until his father's intern, you know, a very attractive and sexy young woman kind of steps in and helps bring the two men together. And I actually donated proceeds from about a week's worth of sales to Hope for the Warriors, which is a great organization that helps our military men, women, and families when they have issues. So I was excited to be able to do that, and in particular explore some of these things in various stories in the series.
Well, I think, I mean, that's wonderful because you're not only empowering your readers, but you're giving the opportunity, empowering the veterans, seeing that there's, you know, out there that there's people that care. I mean, you know, to write a book and then donate your proceeds. I mean, that's very, you only see that in, like, I would say, what percentage of novelists would do that? It's very small that, you know, donate there to charity. And I think that's remarkable. And so One Last Night, they have the intern. How would you classify her character? She was like trying to get these two men together. That was not working out. So I'm not seeing the picture of how she was.
Well, she's actually the father's intern and working for him as part of a scholarship that she's gotten. And she's definitely what we would call spunky and very determined to better herself by getting a college degree. And she really has to risk that in order to kind of get the two men together and resolve why it is that they have not been speaking to each other for over a year, especially since the hero is about to ship out. But of course, this is an erotic romance. So what happens is that when she steps in and goes to see the hero to tell him, the message that the father's relayed, there is obviously an encounter between them. They've known each other in the past. At the end of the day, you know, she finds out the rationale for why this has been a problem with the two men, and helps to kind of work through it to kind of resolve that estrangement before the soldier goes back to war.
Well, it seems amazing, because she's also besides being a mediator, she's also being like a therapist between them, and that it allows the audience to get a compassionate view, I'm sure, of the soldier, where he must have been a little bit like not emotional type, but trying to make amends, and the father might have been a little bit more distance. Is that what I'm picking
up?
Yeah,
for sure. It's really a situation where there's this misunderstanding between the father and the son about why the son has gone into the service, and guilt on the part of the father that he feels responsible for the son choosing this path rather than another one. So they have to resolve that in order to move forward in their relationship. And I like tackling tough issues like that. In the next book in the series, which is called Stay the Night, it's actually about a soldier who's coming back during leave, and one of his last leaves before he decides whether to re-enlist or not. And, you know, he's coming back to a wife who he had to marry, even though he loves her. Their marriage was kind of, forced upon them by fate and not necessarily by choice. And they've been apart for 3 years, basically, and she's changed. She's grown from a young girl into a woman, and a woman who's very independent, and he hasn't changed, or at least he feels he hasn't changed after 3 years, and he's dealing with these issues of this self-sufficient woman, and he doesn't really know who she is. So, you know, it's fun to tackle those kinds of things in a story and make people think about, what happens in people's relationships and how they resolve those things. And a lot of times you touch on issues that a lot of women have in their lives, from friendship issues to obviously husband and boyfriend issues. And it's, sometimes it does help people resolve some of the things that they're dealing with.
Well, Caridad, okay, I need to ask you this. A lot of people, a lot of writers that I know, some write from experience, some write purely from imagination and research. Now, you're writing about military. Now, you had to have either some background or research or experience. So when you write, do you write from experience, or how do you go about, making it real to the reader?
Well, I try to do a lot of research, and I try to reach out to friends who have served. There's also a very big contingent of romance writers who are women who have served. They're called the ROM Vets, and I have some friends who are part of the ROM Vets group. Mm-hmm. And so I try to reach out to them for information when I'm not sure of what might actually be happening, or I'll, obviously do research online and reach out to sources that way to make sure that I'm trying to be accurate about what I'm portraying.
Do you do any writing from experience?
Well, I mean, I actually did write a book about lawyers once.
Okay, there we go.
Very exciting. And some people do consider us bloodsuckers, so maybe it's appropriate for the vampire part of it.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure.
But I think in all the books, there's a little bit of me. These books, I'm calling them the Take a Chance series, which are the military books I just wrote, because it is about taking a chance to reach for something that you want. Those books are all set along the Jersey Shore, because I happen to live along the Jersey Shore, and so I want to kind of give a little authenticity in terms of the location. I've done that in a variety of books. The Vampire series is set in Manhattan because I come here every day to work, and there's so many fascinating things about the city that, you know, I find out even now after spending most of my life here. So, yeah, there are definitely things that are based on my personal observations.
I'm going to have to invite you down to New Orleans so that you
Oh, for sure. I've actually been there. I love New Orleans.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can get a lot of paranormal and vampirish voodoo, you know, inspiration and the culture and everything. So, absolutely, when you're ready to do another one on maybe voodoo and paranormal, just give me a call and I'll definitely, you know, have
for sure.
My guests. So, I also wanted to ask you, I've noticed now that the literary community and academic, before they frowned upon it, but it seems like they loosening up on, you know, their attitude and their, you know, criticism on the romance novels.
I think definitely. I'm pretty sure that Princeton now does a symposium on it every year. And, you know, I think that they are recognizing that this is really an important genre that needs to be recognized. I know I did a talk at Swarthmore. I was invited there as part of a pop culture segment, and it was a Friday afternoon, late in the day, and we had such a surprising turnout. It surprised a lot of the people there because they were just like, wow, look at how many young women are here, and surprised them about how enthusiastic the women were for these novels and to discuss them and to discuss issues in them that just, they just kind of didn't think were, you know, possibly in the novels. And so that was very rewarding for me to kind of see that kind of response at a university like that. And I know my own university, Villanova, featured me in their magazine many years back. And I was honored by that, you know, because it was an acknowledgement that, you know, what I was doing was something that should be recognized.
Well, I mean, that's really, the audience has changed because the people used to think women that read romance novels, they were like, you know, homely, they didn't have an outside life, or they were a widow, or all these, you know, images. And but you just said what, you know, the audience, the young audience and the different number of readers and how the it's sky marketing in the the sales for this genre, that it has definitely changed. And do you think, can you think one or two things right before we go to break? What has made it different?
Well, I think just in general, women, you know, have grown and have, you know, changed in what they do with their lives. And, you know, I think it's reflected in that, you know, having to work outside the home, but also having to work inside the home. And I think it's important to recognize, you know, what women who stay at home do, because that's just as important as going out and earning a salary, and sometimes even more difficult. Anybody who has 3, 4, 5 kids or more knows how difficult it would be. So, you know, the point is that women have choices. And I think romance novels reflect those choices and reflect, you know, the importance of everything that we do in all walks of life.
Well, great. We're getting ready to go to break with Cara Dad Pinheiro, and we'll be right back.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves, and we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi with Trivedi Master Alice Branton. Our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Oh, wait, we back to the show? I have to put my novel down. I was just peeking at my guest in New York, best time seller in USA, Carrie Dad Pignato, and we were talking about, oh my God, romance novels and anything that goes with it. So what I wanted to ask, because it empowers women, but I also heard it can empower men. How can that be? How do they, how would you say, Caridad, that it empowers a man?
Well, I think one of the things we always tease that, you know, every man should have to read at least one romance novel to understand how women think. But I think in general, I mean, you know, there's a survey that was done that says that, you know, women who read romance novels, their marriages last far longer and they're happier. I don't know, you know, it could be for a variety of reasons. I'd like to think that it's because maybe they take more time to think about their relationships and their interactions and try to find ways to work at it. It was interesting, there was a quote I heard from someone about why they'd stayed married for so long, and they say, well, I grew up in an era where things weren't disposable, and we found a way to fix things that were broken. And I think and then they went on to say, and in our day, marriages got fixed. And I think that's what I think in some part romance talks about, is fixing relationships. And I think, you know, men are empowered because I think women do take the time, and the men who do read romances, because there are a lot of them, take the time to understand, you know, how it is that, you know, and what we need in relationships, how it is that we talk to each other, because there is a disconnect in understanding sometimes. And I think that romances help kind of smooth over that disconnect and give people ideas about how the other sex thinks and how they can work things out, because you don't want your marriages or your relationships to be disposable, I don't think. You know, you want to try to fix them when they're not necessarily going as smoothly as you hoped.
So let me ask you this, Caridad. Okay, I'm trying to, you know, I'm on that, I told you earlier, brink, trying to write nonfiction books. And I was doing the writing and doing the descriptive part where it's more anticipatory, not, you know, going into detail, you know, sexually. And I'm just wondering, you know, like, if a man reads that, you know, I always understood, you know, men listen with their ears and they don't, I mean, no, I'm sorry, men visualize and women are the opposite way. So, if a man visually reads something, I wonder if he can get the same stimulation as a woman.
That I can't speak to, but I certainly think that it's not necessarily about the stimulation as in the physical stimulation. It's about the emotional stimulation, and I think that's where the key difference is. I think women don't even need to see the sex. they get emotionally involved in the story, and that's what brings them the pleasure and the satisfaction. And I'd like to think that, you know, a male reader going through that and reading along will also get involved in the characters and get involved in what they're going through and find that satisfaction in what's happening in the story. You know, because I think that's the whole point, ultimately, of a romance. There may be sexual situations, but ultimately, it's about the relationship. It's about the love between the parties. And, you know, the sexual situations that may or may not be in the books, because as I mentioned, faith-based books don't necessarily have
right.
them. It's really about the satisfaction of, you know, getting that happily ever after and finding these people who are able to resolve their differences to come together as partners.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, let me ask you this. How have you found that, you know, writing these books have empowered you in your life?
Well, I think it's definitely given me just so many wonderful opportunities to meet new people and go to new places and just have new experiences and also to explore different facets of me and, you know, what I wanted out of my own life, what I wanted to, for example, show my daughter. I think one of the reasons I started writing was back in the fifth grade, but one of the reasons that I picked it up again with a mind towards, you know, getting published was to show my young daughter that anything was possible if you wanted it badly enough and if you were willing to work hard enough for it. I wanted to instill that in her and show her that as a woman, everything was possible. And I think I have. I'm very proud to say that my daughter, you know, has an MBA, is the owner of her own place, wrote her first book, and we self-published it last year. The name of it is Following Jane. It's a great scavenger hunt story around Jane Austen.
Oh, my.
And I think that was possible because of the actions that I took to show her that you could reach for your dreams and accomplish them.
And also, care to add that you've also incorporated your cultural background. Many of your romance novels focus on the Latino experience. And, I mean, that's you're showing another perspective to an audience that maybe, like you said, those other books were, what were they called when you were growing up?
Oh, the Corintiado, those little graphic novellas.
Yeah, so I mean, you're showing that there's another side. So, have you gotten any response? Or I've known you've written in both languages. Did you started out writing in Spanish or English? Or
I write in English. That I mean, I'm fluent in Spanish and some other languages, but I'm very much write in English. It's the language that I learned in kindergarten and I'm comfortable with. The original books were translated into Spanish and published as bilingual editions. They also did publish them singly, with just English only and Spanish only versions at one point. But for me, I mean, when I started writing, I wanted to, you know, write about stuff that I knew. It was only natural to write about Latino people because, you know, I grew up in a household where when we walked through the doors, you know, we spoke Spanish and our life and culture was there every day, and I wanted to share that with people. And I did that not only in my earlier books, but in a number of my later books. But I also, you know, have written things that aren't strictly for Latinos, because I'm a writer and I like to explore all different elements of, you know, of what I do and what I see. So, but definitely, you know, it was important for me to get that in there and try to get it in there whenever I could to kind of expand what people saw about Latinos and what we were and our different cultures. I mean, I'm Cuban by birth, American by choice, but I like to also show off, you know, Mexican culture, Argentine culture, and I call on my friends and things to tell me about some of their experiences in order to incorporate those in the books.
and to break the stereotypical roles. But we got like 2 minutes before we go to close, and I want everybody to know, how can they find your books? Do you have a website? Any information that would help my audience would be greatly appreciated.
Sure. They can visit me on my website. It's Caridad, CARIDAD.com. I have all kinds of information about the books that I do there, as well as connections to my Facebook page and Twitter and all those other things. I love engaging with people. I promise if you write, I will definitely write back sooner rather than later, because I don't like keep people waiting. And I enjoy really meeting everybody, not only, you know, getting together with writers, but I love meeting all the different kinds of readers and discussing with them what they like and don't like about my books and about romance novels. So I'd love to hear from all of them.
And real quick, you said there was an event November 11th.
Yes, for sure. We have there's a page on Facebook called Read, Write, Remember. And it's going to be a collection of romance authors. We're going to get together on November 11th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to be talking about why we honor veterans and the ways in which we honor veterans. It would be great for you guys to come by and share, you know, how you feel about our veterans and all that they do for us, and find out why it is that we feel it's so important to portray them in our novels and to support them with charity events like the one I just finished.
Well, thank you, my guest, Caridad Pinheiro, and everybody doesn't have to hide behind and, you know, sneak a peek at the romance novels. It's really okay. And go to my guest page. You can find the information there if you can't get it. So thank you so much again for being my guest. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for letting me talk about something that I love so much.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.